Hello, everyone, and happy Friday, and welcome to episode 35 of season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week number 7, is Matthew Simpson of Awesome Friday. So welcome to Awesome Friday on Friday.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because the Awesome Friday podcast actually comes out on a Sunday usually, so it's nice that it's happening on a Friday this time.
Well, did it come out on a Sunday because do you guys record on Fridays? Is that – like where did the idea come from to call it Awesome Fridays, or just because Friday is the awesome day?
So right now we record on Saturday and we release on Sunday. The way Awesome Friday started was actually years ago – myself and Simon, my podcasting partner, when I was single and he didn't have children, and I worked at a job where my work was Sunday to Thursday, and he was a working actor here in Vancouver, and he basically always had Friday off, and we just got into this like habit slash tradition for like 2 years where on Fridays we would go to a matinee and then go have lunch and a couple of beers afterward. And it just became Awesome Friday. So when we started our website, which is coming up on 10 years ago, we just decided to name it after our weekly tradition.
Okay. That makes sense. That definitely makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And now we're so tied to the branding that even though it comes out on a Sunday, we're still Awesome Friday because we call it a state of mind.
As long as people are not expecting the show to come out on Friday, you're good.
Yeah.
Because you don't want people saying, oh, this is crappy Friday, because I was waiting for that Awesome Friday podcast that just doesn't come out.
Yeah. It's one day his kids will be grown and we'll be able to get back to it. But for now, it's Awesome Friday on a Sunday because we say it's a state of mind and not a time. So.
Okay. That makes sense. Minute 35 begins with Theo explaining himself and ends with fire trucks coming from the distance. So yesterday we finished the minute with Hans and – or with Theo trying to explain to Hans what it is that they need to do, and then Hans was a little bit preoccupied with thinking about all the millions of bearer bonds that he's just a few feet away from. And he lost his concentration a little bit and wanted Theo to explain himself, and Theo says – the seventh lock, the electromagnetic seal. You do understand the circuits cannot be cut locally. And then Hans looks at him and goes, trust me. So, first of all, I like the fact that Theo is explaining to both Hans and to us that there is this problem with this electromagnetic seal, right? Now, what do you know about, like, what do you think an electromagnetic lock or seal is? What do you think that is?
I mean, it's a giant magnet that holds the door shut that's powered by the power grid. Otherwise, the circuits could be cut locally.
Pretty much. So electromagnetic lock, what's known as a mag lock, is a locking device that consists of an electromagnet and an armature plate. There are two main types of electric locking devices. Locking devices can either be fail-safe or fail-secure. A fail-secure locking device remains locked when the power is lost. Fail-safe locking devices are unlocked when de-energized. Direct-pull electromagnetic locks are inherently fail-safe. Typically, the electromagnetic portion of the lock is attached to the door frame, and a mating armature plate is attached to the door. The two components are in contact with when the door is closed. When the electromagnet is energized, a current passing through the electromagnet creates a magnetic flux that causes the armature plate to attract to the electromagnet, creating a locking action. Because the mating area of the electromagnet and the armature is relatively large, the force created by the magnetic flux is strong enough to keep the door locked even under stress. So, I mean, that's interesting, the fact that there are two types. You can have a fail-safe or a fail-secure. And apparently Nakatomi decided to go with the wrong one.
Well, and the more common one, even by that description.
But, I mean, it's just very interesting, you know, that basically I'm trying to think of what is the added advantage of having a maglock as opposed on a safe. Besides needing it for the plot. You know,
I don't know enough about safes to... I mean, to me, the question is, they have this electronic lock that's controlled by the computers that requires a code, and then they have five mechanical locks, and then this electromagnet. So why do they need five mechanical... Like, they have three kinds. Why do they need five of one of them?
Right.
Why not seven different kinds of lock? Or, you know... But I don't know what the added advantage is other than plot stakes.
Yeah, which are probably what it is. But it helps. It makes it sound cooler, the fact that, okay, we have this electromagnetic seal. You know, obviously, as we know, since we know, you know, where this plot goes, so we know that it's necessary. You know.
Yeah. It definitely adds, raises the stakes. It also gives Hans another moment where, you know, we've talked at length a little bit about how Carl and Theo are sort of the number one and two henchmen and somewhat peers to Hans. But this gives us a moment to realize that, nope, Hans has compartmentalized parts of the plan away from Theo as well. Because Theo doesn't know how that seal is going to be broken. He just knows that it needs to be broken and he can't do it.
And you'd think that he would have thought about it because, if, you know, I'm assuming Theo knows what an electromagnetic seal is, you know, unlike us, who I needed to look it up for, you know, to figure it out. You'd think that he has somewhat of an idea because of the planning aspects of this. You know,
well, I assume that Theo knows what it is and what would need to happen to unlock it and just doesn't know how exactly Hans plans to accomplish that because, you know...
Why should it be difficult to cut the power in the building?
Well, if he understands it's tied to like the power grid of the city block, like maybe it requires too much power for just what the building itself is able to produce. Whatever it is, my read is that Theo is smart enough to know what has to happen, just not how it's going to happen.
Right. Okay.
And then you get this nice moment where I think the next line, you know, when Theo says we can't cut the seal locally, and Hans just smiles and goes, "Trust me."
Exactly. He's very confident in that answer. You know, trust me. It's Christmas. You know.
Yeah, it's a nice moment that, like, you know, I have a plan, and you don't need to know what it is.
Yeah.
It's a great little.
You're here to do something, and I'm here to do something. You keep to your section of things, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the scene switches, and we see John again. John is coming out on one of the floors, where they're still doing construction, and you see, you know, he's very agitated, very nervous. He's looking around, you know, he's waving his gun in all different directions, and then he begins to belittle himself a bit. And keeps asking himself questions. He goes, "Why the f*** didn't you stop him, John? Because then you'd be dead too, Adam. You know, think, goddammit, think." You know, he's like trying to. He's out of his element right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's still shocked by the fact that he just saw Takagi's brains 2 days ago get splattered all over the window. And he's just trying to figure out, okay, what is it that I need to do now? You know, how do I get myself out of this situation? He's not even thinking about Holly at this point. He's still only thinking about himself.
He's certainly thinking about, you know, he's first and foremost, which is a problem in their marriage, that he is a cop. He's a cop. And so his instinct is to try and help and try and stop them, but... And so even though there was no way he could really have any effect on what happened in that boardroom, he's clearly feels guilty about it, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice bit of characterization. It's also a nice bit of, like, vulnerability for the character. I know it's sort of the norm now, but in 88, it, you know, action stars were superheroes in 1988.
And yeah.
This is one of the first ones where the action hero was just kind of a guy, just another guy. So it's nice to see him showing that vulnerability and showing that self-doubt and guilt. I
Right. I
really
mean, I
appreciate
think
that.
that's also one of the things with this movie is the idea that they're showing us, that this isn't a Schwarzenegger, this isn't a Stallone, this is a typical, everyman who's in this situation, who needs to, which is why I think this movie is so effective. Even though both Schwarzenegger and Stallone, as we've mentioned earlier this week, have made movies where they're in this type of genre, where it's one man against an army or whatever it is. But because Bruce Willis isn't all pumped up like they are, this is something that people can relate to much easier.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely feels like a regular human being through the whole movie. And he gets beat to hell through the whole movie too, which, in most movies the main guy will get cut or shot or something, and the next scene he'll just like shrug it off. But that is definitely not the case in this movie.
Well, he's actually doing all. He's
Yeah.
getting shot, he's getting cut, he's everything that can happen to him happens here except for getting killed. But I mean, I like the way that they this is a script element that they're using here because he's all alone and he's not with anybody else. So he just talks to himself in order to give us, a perspective of who he is. By him belittling himself and saying, "Why didn't I stop it? I'm a cop. I should have stopped it," and then answering the question for himself also, it helps make it very effective that he's telling this over to the audience. We can hear it and we can say, "Okay, you know what? He's right. Why didn't you do anything? Well, because then you'd be dead too." There is something to that. And then the idea that, okay, let me think of some sort of solution. And as he's trying to think of the solution, and this happens numerous times in the movie where he just looks around and then finds a solution. Much later on, we'll have the whole thing with the with the Christmas presents. Where he's just looking around and then a solution just pops into his head. So he starts looking around and he sees, and I love how the camera pans with us so that we see what he's seeing. He sees the sprinklers and like, okay, I see sprinklers. And then he looks to the left and says, "Oh, there's a fire alarm. Maybe I should just pull a fire alarm." And I love the fact that they do this subtly because they show us him looking at these things, but we don't see him pull the fire alarm. We don't need to see him pull the fire alarm.
No, we can make that connection. I love that it cuts to just the alarm panel and the bad guys understanding what's going on.
We see Eddie in the lobby, and you see the panel where there's flashing lights on 32 on the switchboard and stuff like that. And at this point, he picks eight. What's interesting is so we see Eddie then pick up the CB, and he calls to Hans and says, "We got a fire alarm." And then Hans, doesn't even have to think twice. Within seconds, he's answering. He says, "Okay, call 911, give him the guard's name, the building code, number, and cancel the alarm, then disable the system." So, I mean, I like the fact that Hans, once again, is just matter of fact. He's dealing with a problem as soon as it pops up. He doesn't really have to think very long and hard as to how he's going to deal with this problem.
Yes, he's a very decisive leader, very effective leader. And it's,
Well,
you
he's
know, it's one of those things
effective
where,
decision maker, not even just as a leader.
yeah, very, this is what needs to happen, so this is what we're going to do. And I watched this with someone one time where, and someone, the guy I was watching it with, asked, why didn't they just disable the alarm system ahead of time? And the answer is just like, I mean, sure, but also they didn't expect, why would they expect a fire alarm? That's just a waste of time until it happens. So but as soon as it does happen, like, solve the problem. Like, solve the problem and move on. That's,
I mean, they thought about the phones, but they didn't think about that. So you can't think of everything. You think of when you're thinking about it. Okay, so the phones they're going to cut because anyone can go into any room and try and make a call out. But who's going to even think to go to pull a fire alarm?
Yeah,
Which,
exactly.
again, it's a great idea, but it's not something that you would expect someone to do, as you said. So that sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
I love how, when Hans is talking, he doesn't even stop walking. We talked yesterday a little bit about the walk and talk, that he's doing here, but he doesn't miss a beat as he's explaining to Eddie what he needs to do.
Yeah, he does stop at the end of his walk for his next line, I think.
Well, no, because he pauses, and what's really cool is he pauses, and then who's standing right behind him? Did you notice who's standing right behind him when he pauses?
It's Tony, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I never made that connection. That's the reason why he ends up sending Tony on this new mission that we'll find out about on Monday. But he's walking, and then you see his mind racing, and then he stops, and then he looks at, and then he picks up the CB again, and he goes, Eddie, on what floor did that alarm go off? And that just it works really well in explaining what's really going on here.
Yeah, and I don't know what at what point. Yeah, we don't see, I don't believe we see Hans like directly order Tony to go, but Tony is definitely the guy who shows up on floor 32 and
Yeah,
is
exactly. So
it's another one of those great like visual storytelling setup payoff that this movie does so well. McTiernan,
exactly.
when it at his height, was so good at that, like so good at this at that visual aspect of storytelling.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question about that. They do so well here. So, and then they take us back to Heinrich and with Marco, and the two of them are debating, what they're supposed to do. And Marco goes, now, should we go? And Heinrich goes, nine. And I mean, it's funny that they have to cut to them here. They cut to them here because of something that's going to happen like 20 minutes from now, or maybe 10 minutes from now. It's not even, no, it's probably about, there's probably 15, 20 minutes from now when this will happen. But it's nice that they keep reminding us that the two of them are not that far away.
Yeah, and it's another
Even though
great
they're
way
not
to set
needed.
up it's another great way to set up sort of the geography of the situation as well, right? Like we know they're close, but not that close. We know that Tony's going to get there first. We know where John is in relation to everyone else. And it's just nice that it keeps bringing us back to just little visual reminders of who is where and when.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
think it's nice that it also ex it establishes that everyone's talking on the same channel
Yes.
before that starts happening as a more major plot point. That the team does maybe have a little bit of autonomy. Or at least that some of the mercenaries are like, well, maybe we should go be mercenaries. But then the leader's like, no, we should
No,
just do our
I don't need
jobs.
you.
Let's just stay professional. We'll do our job until we're told not to.
Right. Exactly. And then we get a shot of Eddie again. And what's really interesting is did you notice how he calls the fire department?
On that, he has like a. Yeah, it's like an old school car phone,
He has a
portable.
briefcase that inside the briefcase has a portable car phone,
Yeah.
or a portable phone, whatever it is. So now my question would be is, okay, you're in your house, okay? Or actually, it makes more sense. You're in a building that is connected to the fire department, okay? And you call them from a different phone line. Wouldn't they say, well, why aren't you calling from the phone line in the building telling me, because you're telling me that it's a false alarm. It sounds as if they're calling and saying, okay, we have a problem here, so but you don't have to come. So I'm using my cell
Yeah, that's
phone.
probably all it is. Or maybe, the answer might be, I went to look and I'm not near a phone, so I'm using my cell phone.
Right.
But that's a good point. I mean, the answer is I think they cut all of the phone lines.
No, I know that they did, but how does the fire department know that? How does the fire department verify that this really is being, I mean, yes, he's told to use the guard's name. Okay, and the
And
building
code
code
and
number.
identification code.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So maybe that's maybe he's like, okay, I'm out on a smoke break. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, I mean, I don't know if I'm old enough to remember if we had color display in 1988, or I guess 1987 when this was shot. Maybe they are, maybe they weren't able to tell.
Did they have caller ID? Well, again, did who have caller ID?
Did
On a normal
anyone?
phone, no, probably not on a normal phone. But the question is that, did the fire department and the police department and again, he's calling 911.
Yeah, it's true.
He's not even calling the fire department. He's calling 911. 911 definitely was able to triangulate and figure out where a call was coming from or who it was coming from at the time.
True,
But then,
true enough.
if they triangulated it, they would find that he is in Nakatomi. So, okay, there is that too. So I don't know. And then we get to see in the distance a shot from a high window. You see in the distance a lot of cars, and you see four fire trucks coming towards us. And that's how this minute ends. So people are going to have to come back on Monday to find out what happens with these fire trucks.
I mean, I think we know what's going to happen, but it is nice that that last shot is clearly from John's point of view. Like, we don't get to see what happens next exactly, but like, it's pretty clear where we're looking from.
For sure. And so, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, not at all.
Okay, because the script actually, for the first time this entire week, gives us a lot more information than is given in the movie itself. Okay, so the minute begins with Theo explaining about the seventh lock, but in the script it says he just says the seventh lock is that's out of my hands. And Hans's response is, if our plan works, the FBI will get rid of it for us. And then it says, Theo grins and begins to type. So that makes it sound as if Theo actually knows the plan and knows what's going on. And then they show us his screen, and it says he types begin algorithm code program, random numbers and letters, begin going by AAA1111, AAAB11112. Which again, we don't need to see that. We don't need to know about it at all. Then in the scene where McLean is berating himself, so he goes, he screams out, "Why the f didn't you stop him?" He doesn't say John. He doesn't call his name himself. And then he stops for a second and it says, "Because you've been an ignorant son of a bitch, you'd be dead too. Think, goddamn it." So again, there's slight discrepancies. I think Bruce Willis is better at the self-depreciation than is needed from the script itself.
I would say the lines on the screen are better than the ones on the page in this case.
For sure. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Bruce Willis is better. Whether it was ad-libbed or whether it was written on the screen, written on the set, doesn't make a difference. It's better. I agree with you. It's better than what's written in the script. Then the script switches the scene to the fire station. Okay, and it
Oh,
says an
interesting.
alarms. Yeah, it says an alarm sounds. Quickly, firemen move to their machines as a voice of a 911 dispatcher drones along. Main Wilshire units, two alarm fire at Nakatomi Plaza. The voice continues as the station doors open. And then it says, and we cut to seeing the indicator light, that Eddie sees. Then the line that we're gonna get next week about the Dalmatian is actually said now. And then it talks about the fact that Hans is in the elevator with Tony on their way back to the 30th floor. And at that point, he has the conversation with Eddie about the alarm. And then he tells Eddie, to call 911, give him your name. And all that stuff. So I like the way that they change it around a little bit. It would have been nice to see those few seconds in the fire station, but it's not necessary.
Yeah,
It
it's
doesn't
another
really
thing that.
add, it doesn't add that much, but it's still fun to see.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, even if they did film it, that would be like the first thing to go when they start cutting for time, right? Like,
Right,
it's because
probably.
it doesn't really serve anything.
Right.
At least nothing that seeing the fire trucks coming towards the building doesn't all also serve.
Right. That's true. That's
Yeah.
true. So every Friday, we have a surprise segment for my guests that they don't know about, even though they sometimes can figure it out on their own. And so we have Weekend Surprise, okay, where basically. We discussed earlier this week, Matthew, about the fact that whether this movie is considered a Christmas movie or not. So, what's your opinion on it? And for your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a little bit about this before, but I've really gone back and forth on whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And I've recently sort of swung back to the idea that it is a Christmas movie. But I don't, honestly, I'm sort of at a point in my life where I don't think it really matters. If you want to watch Die Hard at Christmas, watch Die Hard at Christmas. It's a great movie and it's a great time of year to watch that. Whether it's set at Christmas or a Christmas movie, it doesn't really, the plot doesn't actually really work unless it's a party that's going to work for a big company like to get everyone together in all the right places for this plot to work for Hans Gruber is if it's a Christmas party. Like, companies don't have summer parties or Easter parties.
Okay, but does it make sense to actually have a Christmas party on Christmas Eve?
I mean, lots of companies do that. I used to work for a company that did that.
Really?
It was,
Don't
yeah, it
they
was.
want people to spend time, don't they want to allow people to spend time with their families on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be great. Yeah, the company I work for now, in my day job, we do our Christmas parties, outside of a pandemic anyway. We do them in like the second week of December. Yeah, I mean, it's yeah, it's such a tough question because I don't really care anymore. I just like the movie. But I think it works. I think it works as a Christmas movie. I think setting it at any other time of year doesn't really work. And as a result, it is a Christmas movie.
Okay, that's fair. That's very
Which is
fair.
a very it's a very practical answer and not a very passionate one, but it is my answer.
Okay, that's good too. Not a problem. I do not have a problem with that. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
No, I mean it's a classic. What else needs to be said? It's it as you mentioned earlier, it established a whole genre and changed the way we make action films and all for the better. And I'm glad that not even now, what 30, 88, 90,
Four,
34
34.
years later, we're still talking and podcasting about it. If it wasn't great, we wouldn't be doing that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So you want to one last time tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. The best way to get in touch with us, to me, is to go to the website, awesomefriday.ca. We also, our main output is currently a podcast, the Awesome Friday Podcast, where every week we talk about two new things. And you can find that anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can also find us on the socials. Twitter and Instagram at Awesome Friday CA and on Facebook at just Awesome Friday. And you can find me at Smathew AF.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to the show. You can find me very simply by doing a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So, Matthew, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for
I
having
think I'm going to give you the weekend to recuperate. I think
me.
you need it.
Well, thank you very much. I do need it.
I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. So everyone have a great weekend, and until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.